Hello, I'm Carrie Weber, Managing Editor for America Magazine. This week's podcast was recorded at the Los Angeles Religious Education Congress in California. We spoke with Sister Diane Brigant, who is a sister of St. Agnes and the Distinguished Professor of Biblical Studies at Catholic Theological Union in Chicago. She has also served as the President of the Catholic Biblical Association of America and has been an active member of the Chicago Catholic Jewish Scholars Dialogue for the past 30 years. America readers may recognize her as a former columnist for The Word, which she authored from 2002 to 2005. At LA Congress, Sister Diane spoke about just war theory and the natural world. She argues that while the traditional understanding of a just war addresses the effect of war on human beings and property, it does not adequately take into account the destruction done to the environment. She spoke with us about the legitimacy of this tradition today. Sister Diane, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Now, I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about what you're going to be speaking about today at LA Congress, which is, can the natural world afford a just war? Where did this connection begin?
Well, for several years, I have been very concerned about integrity of creation, not environmentalism, though I'm concerned about that, but integrity of creation, where we value the natural world not because of its instrumental value, what it can do for us, what we can get from it, but because it has integrity in itself. And consequently, that particular focus has really been a focus of mine as a biblical scholar, looking to see not merely what does the biblical text say, but what does that concern and realization of the fundamental value of the natural world and our place in it, what does that say to us today? So it's a long-standing interest that I have, and I've looked at this, or I've used this as a lens in many different situations. I think people frequently, when they take integrity of creation in the biblical context, they look at the creation narratives, which I've done. But there are other things as well. For example, natural creation relative to the question of war. I mean, and that's what I'm going to do in this paper, is really focus on the just war aspect, proportionality, which is a necessary component if we are to say that a war is just, and that is that the good that comes from it must outweigh the evil caused by it. Now, part of my concern generally has been that our attitude toward the natural world has always been anthropocentric, which means that human values, human interests, human desires are really the focus, and then everything else falls in place to the extent that it benefits us, which is very anthropocentric. And even proportionality in terms of war looks at the toll on human life and human property, all of which is very important. But we've never really factored in what does this do to the natural world. So that's the focus of what my paper is going to be about.
And so what do we consider when we're considering what this does to the natural world? How do we weigh that, and how do we weigh that in relationship to those more human elements?
So, well, see, my point is we don't consider it. After this, the first Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein set fire to all those oil fields, we were primarily concerned with the fact that we're not going to have oil. Not what's this doing to the environment, what is this doing to the water supply. We did not take that into consideration. I mean, some did, but it was never really factored in. Now, in no way am I suggesting that I have a solution. What I'm trying to do is raise the issue of changing our point of view from a purely anthropocentric to realizing that there's a broader context, and that context is the natural world and the integrity of creation.
So what are some of the things we should be concerned about in terms of the integrity of creation, in terms of the environmental effects of war?
Again, what do our weapons do to the environment? What do our environment would mean air? What do our weapons, what are the consequences of our weapon to the water supply? What are the consequences of our weapons to the pollution of Earth? It's issues like that which, again, I don't think the average person even thinks about. We think about human life, which we must, But it's immediate human life and just human life sometimes. And it's got to be a broader understanding.
And I guess we should also consider whatever those effects are in relationship to how that will affect long-term human life.
Well, here, let me just read this. Just as the greenhouse effect, which most people understand, just as the greenhouse effect has changed the composition of global atmosphere, so the dark house effect, which I never heard before and most people don't, caused by the oil slick of the first Gulf, caused by the oil slick of that war, has left its mark in the ocean. So we're still suffering the consequences of that. Now, you cannot deny we suffer the consequences of natural disaster as well. But there's something, you know, within the natural world that, this might sound very trite, it's an element like a self-cleaning oven. I mean, it give it enough time. It takes time. But the natural world has the ability in many ways to clean itself unless the destruction is so severe, and then it simply makes an adjustment, and then what is normal or what is pollution becomes normal. So we're still suffering the effects. The thick oil prevented the sea from swelling, thus altering the distribution of nutrients to marine organisms. And it also limited the penetration of life necessary for photosynthesis to take place.
So how do we establish a greater connection between justice and the integrity of creation?
Well, again, it's a change of attitude. I mean, this is a justice issue. And just as we do with any kind of justice issue, it takes awareness first. And awareness happens incrementally. And that's all I'm trying to do, is raise an awareness and help people see it is a complicated issue, no question. But any issue that's worthwhile is a complicated issue. So am I going to see the results of you know, the change in the atmosphere? I'm not going to live long enough to see that. But I would hope that raising consciousness, both in giving a talk, but somehow or other, if this kind of consciousness is raised in our school systems, you know, with our children, you know, perhaps the next generation, perhaps we don't have to wait for destruction for us to realize, you know, that we can do something about it before it happens.
Yeah, I think often humans, we view ourselves as either outside of nature, as
right.
sort of like independent of it, or just sort of at the center of all of it.
Or at the head, at the
right.
top, exactly. And that's the anthropocentric point of view that new science is challenging. Now, that is not to say that within Earth creatures, you know, that we are a unique manifestation of life. Not to deny that at all. But we're not the only ones. And I'm not a deep ecologist, but some deep ecologists claim that the worst thing that has happened to the natural world is the appearance of humankind, because we have not really learned to live with progress and with development. It's all, what can we get? What can we get? More, more, more. Listen to our advertising. It's always more, more, more. The whole system, economic system of the world is based not on need, but on consumption. And I mean, and even that, we're suffering the consequences of consumption. And I'm not just talking about food consumption. We've got to change our point of view. And that takes a long time, but we have to start somewhere.
How can the Catholic Church or Catholic people help to do this?
I mean, I think that not just the Catholic Church, but within many religious communities, we are learning to realize that we have a responsibility in faith to be sensitive to the natural world. It seems to me, I think it was 1990, John Paul II's New Year's Day speech, he said something about respect for and care for Earth is part of our responsibility as people of faith. Now, that's 1990. And so it has been called to our attention little by little. Now, whether or not we all live it out. But again, you don't live it out unless you're aware of it. So a respect for the natural world and the whole question of need as opposed to desire. You know, it almost sounds un-American to say, if you don't need it, don't buy it, because that undermines our economic system. and, you know, and we all need the economic system we have. Well, Pope Francis is challenging the economic system of the world today. So there are those who look at this very complex issue from various points of view. And that basically is the way a paradigm changes. A little bit here, and a little bit here, and a little bit here, and then gradually the sand shifts.
Now, are there elements of scripture that can help to inspire this and to help us to sort of realize?
Well, one has to be very careful not to give the ancient world more credit than it deserves. And say, well, it's in scripture, and look at, they understood it. Well, traditional people generally have an entirely different attitude toward the natural world. And if we are aware, we learn that from our Native American sisters and brothers. They have a very different attitude. I mean, some, you know, to think you buy and sell land, you know, or, you know, that nations have jurisdiction over air is very foreign to traditional people. Again, you know, in Africa, the Maasai people, geographic boundaries mean absolutely nothing to them. So traditional people have a different attitude toward the relationship. Now, having said that, you find a very different attitude toward land and toward the natural world in both testaments, primarily the Old Testament, because of the kind of stories that we have. But they certainly, you know, recognized that the question of Sabbath, and particularly land Sabbath, that there were years. The seventh year was a Sabbath for the land. Now, that might be good agricultural practice, but they also said it is also then the Jubilee year is the year of the Lord. So there was a religious aspect to allowing the land to lie fallow so that not only it would be good, as I say, agricultural practice, but that people would then realize it's not our land, it's God's land.
Now, do you think we need to revise just war theory to accommodate this kind of proportionality?
Well, if not, we have to stop talking about wars as being just. We have to understand that just war theory was really devised in order to limit the terrors and the destruction of war. Not to say what was possible, but more to say what we shouldn't, a boundary we should not go beyond. I'm not sure we can, now I'm not an ethicist, okay? I'm a concerned citizen. But I'm not sure we can use just war theory. I mean, it doesn't fit the facts of war today. Now, to talk about revising it, well, I mean, if we broaden the idea of proportionality, we are reinterpreting it. So we're not revising the theory. We are reinterpreting what proportionality means, which then, as I say, and that's the conclusion of my presentation, using just war theory, I don't think we can even talk about a just war anymore. Whether a war is justified is a little different. You know, and then we get into the whole question that nations do have a moral right to defend itself. And, you know, nonviolence is an ideal toward which we work. And that's not to say that we should not practice it, but it's a very complicated issue, the whole question of nonviolence, which I don't want to get into. But the just war theory as we know it now, without broadening our understanding of proportionality, I don't think we can use that theory to speak about a war as, you know, as a just war.
How do we, as concerned citizens, sort of advocate for change either in this theory or change in the way our country approaches war or work towards nonviolence?
Whatever you can do is in raising consciousness. That's education on all levels. Preaching, you know, and that's the raising of consciousness. And then, of course, you know, protest. But protesting war is always a very difficult thing. But look what we did in the 60s. We protested a war. Mixed reasons for protesting a war. And again, I'm not a political theorist. I don't know to what extent the protest against the Vietnam War really did affect getting out of Vietnam. I'm not sure. But there is such a thing, you know, as protesting. With some of the peaceful protests that we have had in our country recently, that's a way of raising consciousness. I mean, and I think that's the place that you've got to start that way. to change a theory, theorists change theories. And I have no I'm a theorist in many ways myself. But you change a theory because your own consciousness has been raised. And so, and I'm in education, so that's the field that I know. And that's where I must raise the consciousness. Now, granted, I teach in a seminary, but I'm teaching the future ministers within the church and to raise their consciousness so that they, in whatever they do, raise the consciousness of the others. That's the step that's where I am. And that's what I can do. And I think it is a very valid step. Now, this is Religious Education Conference. They're in education. That's what they can do as well, those who are participating here today.
Many women religious have been actively involved in ecological issues.
Right.
And what...
For a lot of reasons.
Yeah. And yeah, tell me about that.
Some are involved in it because they see a symbolic relationship between Earth and Earth bringing forth, and the woman's body bringing forth. It is not by accident that Earth is referred to as Mother Earth and not Father Earth. And so they see a symbolic relationship in that way, you know. And so in that way, you know, women religious have been very much involved. Many religious communities of women were founded for education, and so they would be involved in that way. Others were founded or have committed themselves, in a certain sense, redefined themselves as committed to justice issues. And that would be a justice issue. Some were founded to minister to the marginal and to those who were dispossessed. And many people see Earth as vulnerable, just as the marginal people. So many religious communities of women, in looking at the reason of their foundation and also their experience of women in the world today, see a very definite connection to ecological issues and also promoting that kind of education and social action. That's a social action element as well, or practice.
Sure, and those are ideas that I think a lot of us can learn from as well. That doesn't
right,
have,
exactly.
You don't have to be a woman religious.
Exactly,
to think
you don't
that,
have
right.
to be a woman religious, not at all.
No, but it's a
I
good
would
example.
Ask though, where did you learn that? I mean, you know, I mean, I'd like to think that somehow or other that the feminist movement within which women religious have been very, you know, active, you know, from the beginning of this new wave, you know, that it has been not been limited to women religious, but they have also been very active in raising consciousness of these issues.
Right, right. Yeah, we can all learn from that.
That's right. That's right.
Very good. Well, thank you so much. This
My
has been
pleasure.
Wonderful.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it.